Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said, if you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case, but the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. So what we fight for, my heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect. And be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom. Wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
You're waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. You hear my words?
TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Relax. Revolutionary greetings. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir. Joe Bumani Shakir. One of our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I would like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On January 3rd, 1947, the NAACP report said 1946 was one of the grimmest years in the history of the National Association of Advancement of Colored People. The report deployed reports of blowtorch killing and iron gouging a Negro veteran freshly returned from a war to end torture and racial extermination, and said Negroes in America have been disillusioned over the ways of lynching, brutality, and official recession from all of the flamboyant promises of post-war democracy and decency. Also on January 3rd, 1961, Representative Adam Clay Powell Jr. of Harlem was elected chairman of the House Education and Labor Committee. Also on January 3rd, 1966, Floyd B. McKissick, North Carolina attorney, named National Director of the Congress of Racial Equality. Also on January 3rd, 1969, Adam Clay Powell Jr., seated by Congress. Also on January 3rd, Also on January 3rd, 1989, Representative John Conyers, a Democrat of Detroit, was elected chairman of the Government Operations Committee of the House of Representatives. On January the 4th, C.L.R. James, author, political economist, historian, was born in Tunapane, Trinidad, 1901. Also on January the 4th, the Amsterdam News was filed 1904. Also on January 4th, the National Negro Baseball League was established in 1920. Also in 1971, Dr. Melvin H. Evans inaugurated the first elected governor of the Virgin Islands. Also on January 4th, 1971, the Congressional Black Caucus was organized. Also on January 4, 1971, Reverend Leon H. Sullivan named to the board of directors of General Motors and became the first black director of American, named to the board of directors of General Motors and became the first black director of America's biggest corporation. Also on January 4, 1985, Leontine Price made her farewell appearance at the New York Metropolitan Opera in the title role of Adia. Also in 1985, January the 4th, Representative William H. Gray III, elected chairman of the House Budget Committee, the highest congressional post held to date by a black. On January the 5th, 1804, Ohio legislature passed the first of a succession of Northern black laws that restrict the rights and movement of free blacks in the North. Most Northern states passed black laws. Constitution of three states, Illinois, Indiana, Oregon, barred black settlers. Also on January the 5th, 1999, Anthony Williams sworn in as mayor of Washington, D.C. On January the 6th, 1832, New England Anti-Slavery Society organized the African Baptist Church on Boston Beacon Hill. Also on January the 6th, 1943, Senator George Washington Carver died at Tuskegee at the age of 78. Also on January the 6th, 1949, UN mediator Ralph Bunche announced that Israel and Egypt had accepted a ceasefire. Also on January the 6th, 1966, Harold R. Perry became second black Roman Catholic bishop in U.S. history. Also on January the 6th, 1971, Cecil A. Partee elected president pro tem of the Illinois State Senate. Also on January the 6th, 1989, Elizabeth D. Kuntz, former head of the National Education Association, died in Salisbury, North Carolina at the age of 69. Also on January 6, 1993, Dizzy Gillespie, jazz trumpeter and one of the founders of modern jazz, died in Englewood, New Jersey at the age of 75. Okay, you got another one. Let me see. Also on January 6th, 2003, Mamie T.L. Mobley, the mother of Emmett Till, who was lynched in Money, Mississippi in 1955, died at the age of 81 in Chicago. She attracted international attention when she opened the casket at the funeral in order to show the world what a lynching had done to her son. Okay. On January 7, 1837, Weekly Advocate, the second major black newspaper founded in New York. The name was later changed to the Color American. Some 40 black newspapers were published before the Civil War. Also on January 7, in 1868, the Mississippi Constitutional Convention, 17 black, 83 whites met in Jackson. Also in 1868, the Arkansas Constitutional Convention, 8 blacks and 43 whites met in Little Rock. Also on January 7, W.B. Purvis invented and patented the fountain pen in 1890. Also on January 7, Zora Neale Hurston, writer, was born in Florida in 1891. Also on January 7, 1955, Mary Anderson made debut in Metropolitan of Opera House as Eureka in Verdi's Masked Ball. She was the first black singer in the company's history. Also on January 7th, Colonel Frederick Gregory was born in 1941. The NASA astronaut was first black to command a space shuttle mission in April 1985. Okay. Got a couple more on that day. Let me see. Okay. Also in 1966, on January 2nd, Martin Luther King Jr. opened a third major campaign in the North calling for desegregation and equal rights in the city of Chicago, a major bastion of the Democratic Party and one of the most segregated cities in America. Okay, we got another one. Okay, also on January 1976, Dr. Mary Frances Berry, named Chancellor of the University of Colorado. She also was an author. Okay. And let me see. We got a couple more dates on this day. Okay. 1995, Lenny Wilkins of the Atlanta Hawks, cited as the all-time winningest coach in the NBA. Yeah, one more. Okay. In the year 2000, the Department of Labor said that the black unemployment rate was 7.9% compared to 3.5% for whites. On today's date, January 8th, 1811, the 8th through the 10th, Louisiana slave rebelled in two parishes about 35 miles from New Orleans. Revolt was suppressed by U.S. troops. Charles Deslonez led the revolt. Was the biggest slave revolt in American history that Lisa talked about. Okay, also in 1863, President Lincoln told a Union general that he had tried for nearly a year and a half to keep from touching slavery and that it was still possible for whites to adopt a policy of gradualism and apprenticeships that would soften the impact of emancipation. Also on today's date, in 1867, legislation giving the suffrage to blacks in the District of Columbia was passed over President Andrew Johnson's veto. Also on today's date, the African National Congress, ANC, after the old liberation movement founded in Tanzania, South Africa, 1912. Also on today's date, 1922, Colonel Charles R. Yar, the high-ranking black in the Army, died in Lagos, Nigeria at the age of 58. And we got a few more. Let me see. I forgot to mention, in 1886, Prophet Noju Ali was born. They founded the Moorish Scientific America, and it considered to be a holiday in the Moorish Scientific ideology. Okay. Also, in 1982, the Reagan administration changed an 11-year-old policy of refusing tax-exempt status to private college and nonprofit institutions that discriminate racially. Okay. And also on this date, in 1990, the National Collegiate Athletic Association revived a controversial Proposition 42, permitting first-year student athletes to receive financial aid based on need and retaining a provision bearing first-year sport participation by students failing to meet minimum education requirements. Okay. That's all for the day we got tonight. Okay, on January 9th, 1861, Mississippi became the second Southern state to secede. Also in 1866, on the night, Frick University was established. Rest College was established in Mississippi. Lincoln and Missouri were also founded in 1866. Also on January 9th, Sekou Toure, president of Guyana, Africa, was born in 1922. Also on January 9th, 1946, poet County Cullen died in New York City at the age of 42. In 1967, Representative Adam Clayton Powell Jr. ousted as chairman of the House Education and Welfare Committee on a charge of wrongfully appropriating congressional funds. Powell accused his critics of racism. On 1977, Lester B. Granger, former director of the National Urban League, died in Alexandria, Louisiana at the age of 79. In 1981, Labor Department announced that black unemployment rate in December 1980 was 14%. I like to see free land, those identified land, revolution and greeting, free out of political prison. I want to thank everybody who has been coming to our broadcast since 2014. I thank all the people currently educating themselves in the community and in collectives, and particularly doing the work. And I like to welcome tonight, Sister Kissesake Siddiqui. How you doing, sister?
Good evening. Thank you for having me on.
Good evening, sister. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sister. Thank you for doing the work. Mm-hmm. Start everything out. Tell the people a little about yourself before we get into this.
Okay.
My
name is Kissesake Siddiqui. I am the daughter of Black Panther Pamela Hanna from the Queens Branch, and also daughter of Kamal Siddiqui, also with Black Panther and now political prisoner at Augusta State Medical Facility. I am proud to be on just to talk about my father. It's interesting because, just with the Cubs, we've been taught by elders to step up, be on the front line, and that's what we're doing. We have to speak on behalf of our parents and there are other Cubs too that are also experiencing what I'm experiencing in terms of the consistent neglect and injustice in the prison system. And, our parents now who fought so hard, as Panthers are now, they're suffering. They're in prison, they're elders, and they're sick, and they're not getting the proper health care that they need. So I'm also, just to give you a little back, I'm a mother. I'm a performance artist. I'm a filmmaker. I have two children. I have a daughter, Yuri, and Malik. My son is Malik. My daughter is 26, and my son is 22. I'm a proud parent. That's a little something
that's
about
beautiful.
Me.
Okay, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. For the people who don't know, can you tell them who was Kamal Siddiqui, a little bit about his history and background before we get into the in particular what's going on with Malik medical wise.
Sure. So, my father joined the Black Panther Party at age 17. He dedicated his life. He was one of the one of the many brothers who was part of the breakfast program. He got up every morning, you know, he served the people. He was out there giving out the Black Panther paper. You know, he was always in the community dedicated to our people. And he and my mother, you know, they were very young when they joined the Black Panther Party. In 1977, around that time, my father was arrested when, actually in 1971, my father was arrested when I was born. It's interesting because my name, Kasese, means this war, and I was named after one of my father's comrades, Twyman Myers, who was also murdered. My father spent like 6 or 7 years in prison when I was a little girl, and we always had such a great relationship. You know, my father wrote me letters, and he always said that one day he'd get out, you know, and that was something that I had always been looking forward to. You know, it's a lot for children to experience their parents incarcerated, you know, especially, you know, when you're kind of born into it. And my father actually was released in like 1977, and spent many years with his daughters, myself. Well, actually, my sister too. Let me backtrack. My sister is Kakuya Shakur. We have the same father. And when my father got out of prison, you know, he went back to school. He worked for the phone company. He was, you know, a man of his community. He was always principled based on what he experienced as a Black Panther and continuing, you know, continuing as a man, you know, with a family. So in 2002, my father was rearrested for a case from 1971 and refusing to bring Asada Shakur back. And so our lives were devastated, and you know, my dad was snatched up, you know, talking about separation of families. And now my father is serving a life sentence, plus 10 years. And so, you know, what I love about him is that with everything that he's been through, he's still this resilient warrior, you know. And now he's going through, again, health issues, you know, horrible, they're under horrible conditions. But, you know, we have such a great relationship that whenever he needs me, he, you know, our way of communication is through JPay via, you know, email. But whenever he communicates with me, I'm there. I'm always be there for him. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a little history.
So indeed, you know what I'm saying? It's quite interesting, you know, that it's quite interesting that you're looking at things that occurred in 71, or they say alleged that happened in 71 or during these particular times, but they kind of lock you up like 30 years later because they feel like you know, mm-hmm. you know something about an individual that they upset. Because the individual is a similar resistance to the struggle, you know, so that's quite mm-hmm. interesting. And another thing that is interesting is that a lot of times people don't look at it like a lot of children have been educated in the struggle as you without even knowing it, and it actually grew up through those particular times, went through those education aspects, they were around these particular elders, the ancestors as well, and it greatly influenced them. And like you said, you know, a lot of youth are picking up their mantle that you want to turn the Black Panther youth, the Black Panther Cub, which is actually a duty in order to commemorate the Black Panther legacy for the Black Panther Alumni Association. You know, so that's a beautiful thing, right? You know, people actually think that COINTELPRO and the state doesn't exist. But we know better than that. We know these particular platforms still exist, and they still trying to neutralize people. You know that they upset about 30 or 40, 50 years ago. You know, it's really crazy. Mm-hmm. It's asinine. on the same thing, we understand the struggle, right? You know, tell the people about some of the medical issues that your dad is facing, and also how can the people support him?
Okay. Well, you know, I must say that folks are already, in terms of the call to action, you know, again, my father reached out to me a few days ago and just telling me that, so he has wounds. He has these open wounds that he's had for a few years, and he's supposed to get he's supposed to see a wound specialist. And he has not been able to, this is not the first time that I'm actually reaching out to folks about call to action. He has not been getting the proper attention where the bandages are supposed to be changed often. And the wounds have gotten infected. He was in the hospital like 2 years ago. I almost lost my father, and he did see not a wound specialist, but he got the in terms of like the antibiotics. So with antibiotics, I mean that's like temporary, you know. He's still like again, about 2 years ago the wound started healing. But again, it's consistent now, you know, like a few days ago, he reached out to me. He says, no, you know, he was supposed to see someone and they denied the proper care. Wounds got infected. He has an infection again. Before, they wanted to amputate his foot, you know, and under no circumstances do we want that. So I have reached out to folks in terms of just contacting the prison and letting them know, you know, no, you will not amputate his foot, and he needs immediate care. He needs a wound specialist, you know. He also, like, back in August, he had vascular surgery, and this is during the time of how COVID, all of the inmates were on lockdown. They were under quarantine. And my father had surgery, and I was trying to reach him. I was calling prison, and not able to reach him. And I had no idea what was going on with him, whether the vascular surgery, whether, you know, he was okay or not. And also dealing with folks that were dying in prison, too. So it's just a lot of stress. You know, it's like, and we don't have communication all the time. So these are things that folks need to know, like not take for granted, to be able to have access to your parents, you know. But right now, so I actually received an email from him yesterday, and he said he did receive antibiotics. But again, he needs to see a wound specialist. So it's just a back and forth situation, you know. And of course, you know, with COVID, you know, I'm not able to see him to visit, you know. And they're like on top of each other too. So, and that's a medical prison. So, you know, he's explained to me how there are brothers that he knows that have died recently. So it's severe. It's serious.
That's what I want to say. You know, Augusta is a medical prison, right? You know, they handle medical issues and enjoy the penal system. So what I'm looking at, like, why are they not giving him the proper medical attention when this is a medical prison? They specialize in that type of activity. They specialize in everything that are medical. You know, they hold mental health patients. They hold people that have amputated legs. A lot of people that might not have hands. People in wheelchair, reading all types of individuals like that. Right. I'm looking at the thing that I'm looking at. You know, they're looking at his status historically, and I'm looking at this treatment as a systematic death
The same way they have murdered a lot of our freedom fighters, ranging from the Black Panther Party, ranging from the Black Liberation Army, ranging from the New African Independent Movement, and so forth and so on, right? That they systematically kill due to the fact that they've been resisting. And I look at all the situation. Yeah, deliberate medical death. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I look at all this stuff, you know what I'm saying? All this stuff really focuses around the aspect of his connection with Asada. You know what I'm saying? That he got a daughter by Asada. You know what I'm saying? He was a Black Panther and all that, you know. You know, I'm looking at all that situation, you know what I'm saying? And it like they're trying to press the brother for information. You know what I'm saying? Make him know something that make him know something that he don't even know anything about, you know. You put press on it, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really crazy. It's really crazy. You know, I commend you for your energy, you know what I'm saying, in order to go forth and do this, right? I commend you for your words.
I have to. Yeah, I have to. You know, I have evolved as a daughter of two Black Panthers, and you know, I've been a part of this since I was born. You know, I'm committed to this work. You know, it's in my DNA. You know, and also just the support too. You know, I'm not alone, which is wonderful. You know, that again, there are other Black Panther cubs that are also experiencing the same thing. You know, we have our other POW, you know, Ws that like Russell Schultz, you know, Mutulu, Sindiata. I mean, there's a list. I mean, Seth Hayes, you know, just how close everything is like Seth Hayes, who passed away, I think, either March. Seth Hayes was one of my father's comrades, you know, and so it's just like in terms of our elders, you know, just what they fought, just the fight, this continuing fight, and then to get so ill, you know, and Seth was out for, I can't recall how long. I was able to see him, which was wonderful, but just like, you know, just it's the lack of the healthcare. And that's the thing. And then they're, you know, they get out, but then it's like the amount of time that they have, you know, with their loved ones. So it's, but again, I have this energy. I have this energy. And it's interesting, you know, with my father, that he continues to be a father to me, like even under the conditions, even when his life, you know, when he's really ill, he still is a father. He's almost apologetic for asking me to do that work. And I'm like, Daddy, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm out here for you. I'm your voice.
True indeed.
So, but it's an ongoing, struggle, you know?
True indeed. You know, if people want to know more about this cave, is there any kind of information out there, any kind of website or any kind of literature or pamphlet that people be educated to know more about your dad and who he is and what he actually experiencing, going through?
Well, there is, if you look up Kamal Siddiqui, there's information on him. It's pretty generic. I mean, it's information just talking just about who he was as a, you know, as a Panther. I do need to work on just informing people, like just more present of what, you know, what he's going through. So right now, folks can reach out to me. You know, I'm on Facebook, and then also my email is ksiddiqui1@gmail.com, you know, for any questions and everything. Again, I've done just with a call to action with, I did a fellowship with Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and recently. And so, you know, part of the work that we're doing, is to bring awareness for political prisoners, you know, and to create toolkits, social media toolkits, just so that people are aware of who, you know, our freedom fighters are and what people can do to help. So right now, again, I'm just asking folks to call just to continue contact in the prison. And I can give that number too. Do you want to give that number for just the call to action? We've been contacting Dr. Alston or Ted and his name, Phil Philbin, at 706-855-4700.
Okay. And this number, his number says who exactly is the individual that they are contacting so people can know?
So we've been contacting, that's at the prison, Dr. Alston, just so that, just to continue this, to put the pressure on in terms of so that my father is able to see a wound specialist. Again, I did communicate with him, and he's receiving the antibiotics, but again, it's like patching up a, you know, a, just not the solution. The solution is that he needs a wound specialist. It's just not like, oh, take antibiotics now and then go through the same process all over, you know, where his wounds are being neglected. And so I don't want to talk to him again. And, you know, and it's like he has a bad infection, you know, so. And because you folks in Georgia too, if you can recommend as well, you know, wound specialists, that would be very helpful too for me.
Okay. That is a good idea. What I want to ask, you know what I'm saying, if there any kind of legal aid or legal assistance that the people can offer or present they can help get this situation alleviated or taken care of? Is there any kind of, is there any need or anything that you think that people can do legally to assist in this situation?
Right. Well, I have been, one of his lawyers, Terry Thompson, has been on it in terms of communicating with the prison. But I'm developing a campaign around my father to get the proper legal aid for him. So that's where I'm at with that. Because he does, I think it needs to be reopened anyway, you know. There's so much injustice of why he's even back in prison. So.
True indeed.
But I think,
true indeed.
You know, but I. And then, like you mentioned, COINTELPRO, and just, you know, they never forget. So, and we must never sleep on the system either. So, but I recommend people to reach out to me via email, and I will definitely reply.
Okay. You know, I also understand that you do playwrights and filmmaking, right? And you do a lot of acting out in regards to like the history of the Black Panther Party. Is there any kind of performance that you utilize that are tools to educate the people about your father, and any kind of plays or any kind of performances?
Well, so the idea that I had, I have performed, it's called, I started a one woman play called My Firstborn, and I call it My Firstborn because that's something my mom, I'm also very close to my mother, and she's always like, said, oh, you're my firstborn, because my parents had me as teenagers. My mother was 16, and so my play actually was like a healing tool for me. It was something that I decided to be creative and do a womanly show, a way of expressing that, just what I've been through, you know, and just bringing, making people aware. And I've taken all the letters that I've collected from my father. Like, now my father doesn't necessarily write emails, but I have collected letters from the early 70s up until now. And so I've just kind of pieced the letters together to tell a story, to shape the story. And so I decided that I wanted to, you know, start my audience. My first audience was at Measles Documentary Center during a Black Panther film festival for like a fundraiser for our political prisoners. And what better audience to have than my elders? So keep it real with me. And so it was just such a wonderful feeling to be able, for me, it was therapy to be able to express and tell a story about just not only just, you know, the idea of what we see in media, like the Panthers and the berets and stuff, but like to humanize who my family is, you know, to show them in the light of just being people, you know, people that love, my parents love one another, you know, it's like a love story too. You know, we have to understand the struggle of revolution, being a revolutionary, it's the premise that it's the deepness, it's the love. That's what it's about. And so I've done like four or five performances, and it just keeps growing. I keep nurturing it, and like, you know, what I'm experiencing with my father and mother now, I will add to it, you know, add to the play. So it gets meatier, you know. And then I actually did a performance at Princeton with one of the students there had an organization for high school students, and they were like, actually they were just quiet when I performed because they thought, they didn't even know that Panthers, that Black Panthers have children, that they survived and had children.
Oh, so wow. It's
just interesting that I've had such a different audiences, but with them, they had so many questions, you know, and then I realized, wow, people really don't know our history. And so being the next generation, you know, was just nice to like really just communicate that with them and tell a story and have people laughing and crying and, you know, asking questions and saying, what can they do? What can they do? So, it really helps. It helps me, and it helps just, you know, just again, just putting it out there and just educating folks, because that's what I want to do, you know? So, now with COVID too, you know, it's like, cause actually our last performance I did was in last year, January, and then COVID happened. And so I haven't done any performances in person with an audience, but now we have other ways to communicate. So I'm thinking next, you know, to figure it out with the, you know, a Zoom performance or something, you know, to still have an audience. So, and keep it going.
So. True indeed. You know, like you said, a lot of times people don't know history, you know, and we actually think they know things because the internet is out here. But we also understand that there's a lot of propaganda being controlled by the enemy. And they use a lot of things to defamate our character, belittle our movements, make our people look like criminals. And just make our people look like criminals other than gangsters when our people really were fighting for freedom, justice, and equality, and that they actually had a genuine cause in regard to what they were doing. You know, they wanted to control the environment. They wanted to control the conditions, you know. That they wanted to make things better, you know what I'm saying, for our people. You know what I'm saying? During that time and what is right now, you know, so it really just sad sometimes. Really sad when you look at those particular predicaments and what's going on, right? And I see that you're educating the people through art. You know, the art always been a tool of resistance, you know. It's always been a tool of resistance.
Yep.
You know, for Can you tell the people some of the things about your dad that people don't know that don't inspire you or motivate you, or they're based on some teachings that he gave you that keeps you motivated and keep you going?
Well, my father, so, and I include this in my play, and I make jokes about it, though, that, like, when I was younger, my father wanted me, like, to train, because my father was into martial arts. I think a lot of brothers and sisters, so, you know, Black Panthers also studied martial arts, and so he just wanted me to be this soldier, you know, like when he came home from prison, he was just about me, like, doing exercises and stuff, and I appreciate it now, because, you know, he was pretty impressed with what I could do. He had me, like, and I see this in my play, like, doing all, like, 1,000 jumping jacks, and, you know, I had to wake up in the morning, and he, of course, he loved Bruce Lee, and, you know, I wake up, and I would run track and do all kinds of, you know, exercises, and he wanted to put me in schools for, you know, with karate, but I wanted to dance because that's what I love doing. That was my passion. So it was just interesting, like, just how our relationship, you know, like how we kind of shaped this, like, father-daughter, you know, relationship, and my mother allowed that, you know, because it's a lot, you know, reentry when coming out of that system and trying to reestablish yourself, you know, just becoming a man, you know, like, it was just a lot, but we always were close, and we've always, really close, and I mean, something that people really know, he loves science fiction. Like, he loves to read, you know, he loves science fiction. He's a great storyteller too. And he's very, like, just charismatic, and just, you know, he has many sides to him. So I enjoy, like, when I receive his letters, because, you know, I also, something that we take for granted is, like, the letter writing, you know, when you receive a letter and it's like the person you love handwriting, you know, it's like that's part of his character too. So, yeah, that's some of the little things. Besides being just a badass soldier, you know, one of the most I admire him so much. But yeah, just. You know, just our relationship. We have such a great relationship, and he even expressed to me that he was proud of me for, like, just deciding to do a play, you know, about our history and he and my mother's life, you know, as Panthers growing up.
True, indeed. Is there any kind of way that people can see the play or purchase the play? Any kind of way they can do so? Is there any options in regard to seeing or purchasing it or anything like that?
That's a good. Yeah, I'm trying to think. You know, there will be. Stay tuned. I'm gonna.
Okay.
Because it's still a work in progress. So
that sounds good.
But again, reach out to me. Yeah. Reach out to me via email, and I'll, you know.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? For everybody listening, can you tell her how important is it for us to support political prisoners? How important is it for us to support your dad? How important is it for us to support you and your work? How important is that? You know what I'm saying? What is significant behind all that for the people who are listening? You know, just your own thoughts about it, you know?
Wow. I mean, they shaped who we are today, you know? The sacrifices, you know? Like, the... When I say, again, just being like, you know, just the sacrifices that they made, and, like, it's so important for us to support them, to know who they are, to know that, again, that this, well, we know in terms of this, the struggle continues. I mean, and it repeats itself. And I mean, none of us are shocked about what's happening in our society today with, you know, with just what happened with the Capitol or just like the police brutality. I mean, we know that police brutality has been, that's what they were fighting for back then. That's part of the 10-point, you know, platform that is one of the main things too, you know. Yeah, we have to continue to write them. We have to, and we definitely, in terms of their health, need to get them home. We have to get our elders home, their grandparents. You know, I can't express deeply enough how I have children who don't. That the way that they communicate with their grandfather is, you know, a video. As a matter of fact, over the holidays, there was a video. We had a video chat, and we didn't even, the audio was horrible, and we could hardly see him, you know. And that's the way that he's able to communicate with his grandkids, you know. It just affects our lives so much, you know. It really does. And we survive, and we keep going and going and going. But it's hard. It's very hard, you know. It's just being able to talk and express, and like again, you know, now a lot of the Cubs now we're up, you know, sharing and spreading the word about our parents, because if we don't, who will? You know what I mean? Like. And yeah. We don't want our people dying in prison.
Nah,
no,
we don't. Man, that's a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Bad situation. You know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the atrocities of prayers are not, people don't talk about those atrocities, and a lot of times people act like the prison match card doesn't affect them. And when you look at things, you know what I'm saying, statistic wise, it's like basically 6 out of 10 people, they know somebody that's been incarcerated, or somebody who's related to being incarcerated, and know somebody who's been incarcerated, period. And it affects them. Especially on the glorification of media in regards to prison life and being a gangster, being a thug, and being a criminal, all this stuff being glorified, you know. You're being promoted.
I know.
The violence is being promoted, you know. So the prisoner slave company is the biggest business in the world. So you already know they're going to do whatever it takes for them to keep people in there. You know, especially people knowing that they're political prisoners, you know, and it just, you know what I'm saying, it seems not make no sense, you know, to us who understand and aware, but to them, it makes a whole lot of sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy keep your head on, their hands on, you know, keep you in the system, keep you oppressed, keep you down. Don't let it try to break your spirit.
Destroy
that spirit of inspiration.
Yep, and that's what they can't do, and they won't do. You know, my strength comes from that. I know that what all they go through, they you cannot beat them down. They have that spirit, you know. They have that discipline, that spirit, you know. What that's another thing, just understanding who the Panthers are in terms of like it wasn't just about picking up a gun. They had to read, you know. Again, they were in the communities. You know, it was about us taking back our communities, you know, so that our people can feel safe, you know. My warriors, my heroes are my parents, you know, my all the political prisoners, you know, our freedom fighters, you know.
True indeed.
We have to say their names. We have to acknowledge them. Always.
Yes, we do. You know what I'm saying? Where does our ancestors? You know, you mentioned a cub, right? You know what I'm saying? For the people who are listening, what exactly does that mean to be a cub? What exactly does that mean? What does that embody? What does that mean, you know, when you say you're a cub? What does a cub do? What does a cub represent? You know, how a cub conduct themselves, you know?
We are the children. We are the next generation. We are the children. We are the legacy keepers. You know, we pass it on. We pass it on to our children. They're grand cubs. You know, we educate. You know, we educate, and we're family. That's another thing. Cubs are cousins. We're family. Because you know the reality too. We need support too. We've taken on a lot, and we need support. Sometimes we just need like a little retreat or something, you know, like because we have similar stories and stuff, and so sometimes we just need a space for us to just be, communicate, you know, just feel sort of like human and normal, you know, and laugh, you know, we need laughter. And joy, you know, we use the word struggle a lot, but we need laughter and joy and you know, to be healthy, you know. So because stress, you know, that's that too. You feel all the stress and that bum holding it up, holding it down, you know, and that affects us too. So, yeah, I've been a cub all my life. born a cub, you know. I've been a cub. I mean, I do think I was reflecting today on just thinking about what I've seen, you know, like as a little girl. These are stories that my mom has told me, but you know, it was deliberate. Like I remember going to visit my father and, you know, being locked in a room with my mom, you know, for my father to come in, you know, we were told he was in jail and we were told that he was going to see us momentarily, and he didn't come into the, you know, room for like hours and hours. And I was a little girl and I was devastated, you know, it's like experiencing a lot of trauma, you know, and they do those things, but deliberately to separate us, to break us, you know, what better way to try to break the families. So
true indeed. Was that disruption of black civilization, you know, like Chancellor Williams said, you know, it's the old system would destroy you psychologically, makes you insane, you know, and it been examples of that. For the children of a lot of our freedom fighters throughout history, there have been examples of that. Of children going insane and having mental issues, and you know, children doing certain things that wasn't expected of them. You know what I'm saying? That were contrary to them going out to what they were educated and trained to do. You know, and also like there's a lot of children from born from a different mood. People incarcerated like the RNA 11. People in the black counterpart, people in the black liberation army, you know, people, children that have been born, that people in the move family, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Children that were born through those particular situations that had to endure that, had to do those sacrifices, seeing their parents incarcerate 30 or 40 years, or 25 years, 15 years, 50 years, or whatever, you know, and see all they going down. They have a great effect on them because they still got to live their life on the street, but still be active,
right.
Still be active relationship with their particular parent. You know what I'm saying? A parent that's in there. So that brings a whole other predicament to the situation in life. It brings a whole different element, you know. It gives mm-hmm. a whole different definition of what struggle is about. You know, it's crazy, right? It's really crazy.
It is.
You know, do you have any final thoughts? Do you have any final thoughts to leave with before we end the broadcast? You know, you want to leave any kind of contact information? You want to read something, or you want to share some thoughts? What do you want to do?
It's funny because you said we're going to read something, and I've read this before. I can just say it's just interesting, like the letters that I've gotten from my father. You know, in the 70s, the way he talked about America and just what we've, what our struggles were then or our struggles now. So it's just interesting to read his words from back then, and it's so relative to what's going on now. You know, so it's just a continuation, and we just gotta, you know, we gotta step up as we, you know, step up. And I just want to thank you for, and again, just having me on. You know, this time has been a climatic time again, because I've had both my parents sick, so I'm laughing, but it's probably a laughter of just anxiety, whatever, because you know it is a lot to see our parents getting ill and just wanted to be there for them, you know. But yeah, we just have to continue fighting. We do. We have to continue. You know, we got to free them all.
Indeed.
We got to free them all. Free them all. And what did it say? What's the call? Free them all.
What's the call? Free them all.
Free them all.
Yeah,
yep.
We got to free them all. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Free them all, political prisoner, part of our reparations. We need
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Yep,
we need
too.
All of them. We need everybody out.
Everybody out.
You know, again, I want to thank you for coming to our platform to share your knowledge. We understand, to share your experiences. I want to thank you for the work you're committing in the past, the work you're committing in the present, the work you're committing in the future. And I want to thank you for being committed to carry on the spirit of resistance. But that's what you're
mm-hmm.
expressing, you know what I'm saying? Continue the legacy of the work. I want to thank you and commend you for that. You know, you should be, you know what I'm saying? I thank you for celebrating the history and legacy of your dad and where's your mom. I thank you for
mm-hmm.
commemorating and celebrating the aspects of our struggle. I thank you for uplifting and keeping it in high priority that we have political prisoners, prisoners of war, and people that are attacked by the system that are still fighting.
Yep.
I appreciate you, sister.
I appreciate you too,
brother. No doubt. You know what I'm saying? If anyone had anyone, loved one, associate, comrades, family members incarcerated, please link into our website, which is www.georgeuniversity. Again, it's www.georgeuniversity.com. Free the land, long live resistance, and free all the political prisoners.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
You know what gang violence is, mostly,
yeah.
And the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member. So, of course, you retaliate.
Check me out right here,
you know what
bro.
I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
I'm introducing drugs on crack to us ghetto teens. Got a lot for raw niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I wrote this. Got the devil petrified. Hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, over dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit kick, we block hit. When I drop stick, all hell, I don't bail. Wrath, let you talk a list. Forever ghetto, necessary picture food stamp. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food
stamp. We got a real object from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to rock to that.
DJ
from my soldiers to death, when I fuck my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death, we got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to rock to that. From my soldiers to death, when I fuck my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, are you ready to see the war? It's the prophecy, survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets of time, yeah, any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary, damn, damn. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you bitch me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution.